We should sit there. We see it all nicely.
Ráno je jedinstvo.
Mama, kde si, mama?
Reci.
Ej, mama, šta radiš?
Ali ima nešto da mi s pacijentima. Jel nešto važno trebaš, imam puno posla, nema mi posla.
Neki posao.
Znaš šta, mama? Reci. Ja sam neki ljubavni film. Ljubavni film?
Da. Ma jako mi se svidio.
Svidio ti se ljubavni film?
Pa sam nešto baš mislila.
Da?
Kako ste se ti i tata oženili? Ste se isto tako zaljubili?
No, da, ono se ljubili smo se, ali to ti bilo jako davno. Pa moraš, nijem ti sad vremena. Što želiš, ajde reci?
Pa hoću ja isto tako imati muža i to
sve. Ma da, pa imat ćeš i ti će se nekako. A to ti je sad predavno. Ajde, molim te, ovdje se igra sa barbikama. Poslije ćemo, ovo mi je sad jako bitno da izaša. Molim, ajde, igra se.
Dobro.
Ajde, neki drugi put.
Ajde, može.
Ajde, ljubav mi film.
Filma nije bio onaj mobitel, treba mi doći poruka sa Fejsa. Aha, tu je. Ajme, večera su u 10, je party,
ja nema ništa u
kući.
Kako je to frizura?
Moderna, kako će biti? Slušaj, vidjela sam super minicu.
Minicu?
I super, znaš koje štikle sam vidjela, 500 kuna mi treba.
Za
samo 500 kuna sitnica.
Neću se vratiti prekasno.
Ma, tako.
A dobro, ajde.
1, 2,
izvolim. A nemoj se vratiti prekasno.
Ma neću. Evo što se stavim ruž.
Nemoj se vratiti prekasno.
Vidimo se, bo.
Bari prije dva.
Nine months later, 9 mjeseci poslije.
Vratila se prvo.
Mama!
Yes? Rec.
Mama!
Da?
Mama!
Što misliš? Što misliš?
Imaš muža?
Ne imam muža.
Pa kako nemaš muža? Nisi si našla muža. Kako nisi našla muža?
Pa sam znala kako! Samo sam ovo, nisi mi nikad rekla kako da nađem muža, a ono to se dogodilo.
Muža, djecu, kuću,
pa što se primiš? A kako pa, otkud mi pa, kako ne
nemam? Ja,
kako ću ja to, kako ću naći? Kako, ko će mi dati muža?
Sad ja reći, kad je tata se htio tvoje ženiti, on je pitao starije tate, oni su preporučili mene i tako smo se mi oženili. Ne moraš ti uopće o to ne brinuti.
Ne moram se brinuti i dobit ću muža.
Dobit ćeš muža, tada i ona će ti naći tatu koji će se do kraja života brinuti o tebi. Ali znaš šta, ja mislim da sada nije vrijeme da se ti brineš o tome, nego znaš šta, ti lijepo crtaš. I ja mislim da bi bilo lijepo da nas vjode na tempov i da se pobrinemo za pozadnje noći i gornji taj.
Da nacrtamo sve.
Da, da, da,
može.
Može.
Hvala.
Good, very nice, very nice. Excellent. No need to comment. Okay. Yeah, role plays are nice, isn't it? You like it? Yes, it's a good tool, you know, to deepen the learning experience and, you know, for the people to watch. In the Holy Name Retreat, we also make role plays, you know. Actually, once Chandramurti Swami came to Echo Chakra for the Holy Name Retreat, and he took part in the role plays. Yeah, it was very funny. Oh, the man, yes, their role play. They were demonstrating this point of chastity, you know? And they had the scenario that one traditional chaste lady and a modern lady were going on the train in India. And the modern lady, she was always pulling the head cover away from the chaste one, you know. So they were playing. One boy had a gobi skirt on and head covered, you know. He was sitting there, and then the other one was all, you know, fancy one, and she was always pulling her headpiece off and teasing her, you know. And then there was some men in the train, and they were watching and, you know, kind of, yeah, connecting with this unchaste lady, you know, because she was always sitting there provocatively, and they were all looking at her and this and that, you know. So, and that was going on for a while, until the chaste lady all of a sudden gave a smack to the unchaste one, you know, slapped her in the face. And then the men were all, you know, they were all, bravo, well done, you know. They were respecting the chaste one, you know. They were kind of connecting with the unchaste one, but the real respect went towards her, you know. And her they supported, you know. Yes. Yeah, so that was their well playing. Yeah, it was well played, it was funny, you know. Okay, so first topic for this afternoon, how to address women, right? This topic came up already a couple of days ago. Somebody was saying, yes, no, there's some confusion, you know. Maybe not so much in this part of the world, or do you have people who want to be called Pudu or something, women?
Traces of that.
Yes. So anyway, just to share from my own experience, actually for many years I was also confused how I should call other women. You know? Because when I joined in Australia, the women called each other Prabhu. This is how I grew up in Krishna consciousness. You know, we called each other Prabhu, and yes, the philosophy behind it was that yes, we are servant, we should see each other as master, so therefore we call each other Prabhu. And this was all I knew. So, and then when, after we got married, we went to Latvia, to Riga, and we started the preaching there, and I was naturally in charge of the women. So, and I was trying to tell them that women also call each other Prabhu, but it was simply not accepted. Doesn't matter how hard I tried, it just didn't take off, you know, nobody accepted it. Everybody called each other Maruji, even though I sometimes was saying, yes, Prabhu, it's also nice, master, this, that. No. people just didn't take it. You know? So, and then, yes, then for quite a while I was at a loss, especially when it comes to, you know, referring to younger girls, how to call them. Mataji seems unusual, inappropriate, you know. So then really, the whole topic really only became clear, yeah, well, only a few years ago when I was more deeply, you know, getting into this whole topic of culture, then it became clear to me. So, since we don't have so much time, we will not, you know, share how do we feel when we are called Mataji and all this, you know. Usually when we have more time, we collect. Sometimes people, there's a broad spectrum there, you know. Some people feel really nice when men call them Prabhu, you know, they feel respected and honored and everything. But then others say, ooh, I hate it. You know, it's a really broad spectrum there, you know. And when we do the course in Mayapur, there I usually have a completely mixed audience from all corners of the world. And you can immediately see, you know, those people coming from those countries where there's still a little bit of spiritual culture there, they are completely fine with Mataji. But those people who come from countries where there has never been spiritual culture, like Australia or America, there's no history of spiritual culture, you know. At least Germany has an old history of spiritual culture. It's all there still, you know, the leftovers. But countries like America, Australia never had spiritual culture. Well, Australia, the Aboriginal, you know, but meaning the Western people, you know, they're all new people there, you know. Western person has only existed 200 years in Australia or something, 250, something like that, you know. So there's no old history of culture, you know. So you could very clearly, you can see those people from America or Australia, they usually have a problem with it, you know. So you can directly see how it is connected with culture, you know. Because let us collect, you know, the different aspects of position of mother in materialistic culture. What's mother's position in materialistic culture, in a culture where sense gratification is the goal of life, sex life, where this is the goal? What is the position of mother? You tell me. Hmm?
Career and motherhood should go together, like someone who is mother can also work and should work. And
yes,
so it's not that important that she's a mother, but that she works.
Yes, yes. So that's the whole thing. Mother in itself is nothing. It's not valued, not appreciated. What? You are only mother and housewife? Is that all you are doing? Right? And that all propaganda is there, that a woman has to have a career, she has to be working, earning money. That's success of a woman, you know? Yes. Very strong propaganda. By the way, that propaganda is mainly coming so that families have more money to buy all kinds of junk, which actually is not necessary. Because if only one person earns money, then usually there's not so much money to go around to buy all kinds of unnecessary necessities, meaning all the junk and rubbish in the shops, which actually nobody needs. You know, there will not be any money for that. So that's why this whole propaganda, it's just a money thing. So the whole consuming society continues. That's all it is. You know, and even often devotees, they really are convinced, well, from one salary, one cannot maintain a family, which is nonsense. It means we have too high standard of life.
You know?
Simply living. Anyway. So, mother. Not valued, not respected. What else?
A slave at home and on work.
Yes, poor slave at home, she has to work at home and can't enjoy life. She can't go out and party, you know, she can't develop her amazing talents and so on. She can't have a career, she can't work. Poor thing, she has to be at home and work. She's missing out all the fun in life, basically. Yes?
Also, there is a situation when a woman wants to get a job, and if she's not a mother yet, there is in many occasions she has to sign the paper that she will not be pregnant in 2 years, like 2 for example, then she will get a job. She cannot be mother.
Oh, yeah, interesting.
If she wants life.
Just see. So. She has to promise not to be your mother. Yeah. Yes. So this whole motherhood is completely, you know, pushed aside and, you know. So, and that's why, you know, mothers, they often give their children with 6 weeks of age, they put them in the daycare center just so they can have their life. And this is so damaging for the children. Oh my God. You know, the first 5 years are so important. And the children need the mother, not so much the father, it's the mother. There's a verse in Manu Samhita, Bhakti Vigyan Maharaj sent it to me, so give me the quote. It says the mother is 1,000 times more important than the father. 1,000 times. Yes. It's the mother who plants the seeds of bhakti and you know. And she gives the whole emotional balance and health and strength of the living entity in these first 5 years. It's a proven fact that, for example, if boys don't get that motherly attention and affection, that female energy in form of mother, they find it very difficult to be celibate. They always run after this female energy in form of sex life. That's why there's so much perversions in this world today. It's because people don't have a proper mother. Same? Again, Krishna's system, yeah? And if we think our system is better than Krishna's system, we get global reactions. Yeah? Yes. That's why people are so screwed up and mentally disturbed and, you know, so perverted in their whole sexual attitudes. It comes back mainly to this point of mother. Yeah, interesting, isn't it? Yeah, so what else? Also, well, her body often goes a bit out of shape after, you know, 2 or 3 children or something. She's not so sexually attractive for the husband anymore or something. That's why many women don't want to breastfeed and, you know, all these things, just to keep the body in shape and you know, it's a whole thing, you know. Yeah, so that's the main things. So really, this whole important position of mother is completely lost and forgotten today. Really, completely lost and forgotten. You know? Yes, yes. And this is so deep. I mean, once, a couple of years ago, I met one Mataji who I was Brahmacharini with in Australia when I joined, you know, 25, 30 years ago. So I hadn't seen her for a long time and we were talking. And I asked her, so what's going on in your life? Her daughter is a teenager, you know, she's married and has a daughter, and daughter is 18, 20 or something. So, and I asked her, what are you doing? And she said, I'm going back to university. And what? You're going back to university? What for? What for? Why that? You know? And you know what she said? She said, well, you know, I've only been all my wife, just only a mother and housewife. And I just felt I have to do something else. You know? So even the devotees have this programming, this conditioning. They almost have some complexes there, you know, that I'm only a mother and a housewife. So that's why she went back to university to study, just to get a degree, just to satisfy her ego. I'm not only a mother and housewife, but now I'm a master's or whatever and this and that. Oh my God, you know, what a waste of time, you know. Yes, I was shocked, you know, that even senior devotees who've been around for 30 years have that attitude, you know, to being a mother, you know. And I gave her a whole talk, you know, how she should be sharing with the young devotees how to survive for 30 years and in family life and bringing up a child and still chanting 16 rounds every day and overcoming all kinds of testing moments in the marriage. You know, we need senior devotees who give care and guidance to the young devotees. That's what she should be doing, you know, passing on all that wealth of life experience instead of going to university to get some degree, you know. Yes. Yeah, but these things are going on, you know. So even amongst us devotees, it's not firmly established, you know? Yes, definitely not. So now, let us collect, you know, the position of mother within spiritual culture. What's that? What's her position? Yes, first guru. Yes. Really, she plants the seeds of bhakti, engaging the child, you know, attracting the child's mind in all kinds of creative ways, you know, to remember Krishna. Children by nature, they have attraction to Krishna because their mind is not burdened with sex desire and false ego so much, you know, so therefore they're much more pure-hearted and much easier attracted to Krishna. So that's the mother's, you know, important function, that she engages a child in a very affectionate and joyful and interesting way in Krishna consciousness. Reading stories, playing, drawing, dramas, so many things, unlimited. Actually, if a woman says it's boring to be at home and be a mother, she has no idea what it means to be a mother. No idea. You know, you can have Goloka Vrindavan in your home every single day, actually. You know, doing all kinds of things with the kids, go taking them in nature, collecting all different things, decorating the altar, oh my God, you know, swinging, bathing, whatever. You know, cooking for the deities, this, that. Oh, it's unlimited. How can you say it's boring, you know? Of course, I mean, the other thing is that being mother these days in a nuclear family, not so easy, you know. This is actually unnatural life, you know. Human life is meant to be lived in extended families, and there's so many ladies there with all different generations, and they all help each other and support each other, and, you know, and yeah, help with the cooking and all the household functions. It's not just all on one mother. This is complete crazy, actually, you know, this Western lifestyle of nuclear family. Very unnatural, you know. Yes. So, but that's why we have to make our yatras like the extended family, you know? That rather having our bodily family members, we have our spiritual family members, and all the ladies from the yatra, they are our aunties and sisters and mothers and grandmothers. And we amend to actually, you know, create that extent, that mood of extended family within a yatra. Prabhupada was always encouraging the women to, that they, you know, get together, they do take care of the children together, not just every mother sitting in their flat and taking care of one child, you know, while they have a little kindergarten thing there, and that frees the other mothers to do something else, you know, and take turns, this, that, you know, so many things, you know. Yeah, so mother in spiritual culture, she's first guru. She is the one who creates the spiritual atmosphere in the homes. It's the mother. That's her purifying duty. Husband's purifying duty, men's purifying duty is to protect, provide, and take charge. You know? And the woman's purifying duty is she creates a spiritual atmosphere in the house, in the family, and thus within the whole society, because society is built of many families. Just on the side, the quickest way to destroy religion and spirituality in human society is by getting into the women's ears and telling them that they should have a professional career. Sounds maybe a little provocative, but it is a fact. I've confirmed with this with several Maharajas who know about spiritual culture. That destroys spirituality in human society. If the women are out having a career, it doesn't mean they can't earn any money at all. No, but mainly career means, you know, your whole focus. If you want to have a professional career these days, you have to be focused on it because there's so much competition. You have to be constantly on the latest level of, you know, of further education and this and that.
Excuse me for interruption. Suvarna Bindu is not
here. He's looking for his wife, is he? Maybe dressed up in a sari and hiding somewhere or something.
Protecting.
Yeah, so today, if you want to have a professional career, you have to be completely focused as a woman on that. And then naturally in the evenings, you're not going to have any time and energy left to create some spiritual atmosphere there in the home, you know. And the cooking suffers, no proper devotional home cooking. That's where the whole fast food culture comes in, McDonald's and. It's all a result of the women leaving the home becoming professionals, you know. Yes. And yes, and her function, she is the harmonizing and balancing force, the mother. Harmonizing the relationships, balancing, she's the caretaker, you know? It's all the mother. I mean, Krishna has given us 5 human mothers. One is not enough. 5, you know? So that is wife of guru, including Shiksha guru, wife of brahmanas, well, we've got lots of them, then wife of the king, the queen, she's also a mother. We can expand it a bit and say, well, the wives of the managers, temple presidents, GBCs, regional secretaries, if they have a wife, you know, she's also an important mother. Then the physical mother, and the nurse, meaning the medical, physical caregiver. They're all mothers. I mean, this is almost every woman, you know? That just shows how important this motherly mood and energy is, that Krishna is, you know, giving us 5 mothers. There's not human mothers, then it's still Mother Earth, Mother Cow. But you know, when we had our program celebrating the glories of our mothers, I was saying, let's keep the earth and cow out. You know, let's first develop our respect to the human mothers, you know, then maybe it will be easier to respect Mother Cow and Mother Earth, because, oh yeah, Mother Cow, everybody likes to talk about it, you know, and as long as it's a little hobby, it's fine, you know, we're not going to get anywhere like this, you know. So let's just put them aside for the time being and concentrate on the human mothers and reestablish the importance of the human mothers. And then maybe, you know, this will help us to also respect more Mother Cow and Mother Earth. Otherwise, it's just going to be some lip service there, you know. It's not going to be serious if we can't even respect our human mothers, you know. Yes. I mean, in some Vedas, I don't know where it was, one Mataji was sending me this little quote. There is Matru Devo Bhava, Pitru Devo Bhava, Achayu Devo Bhava, Atiti Devo Bhava. It means Matru Devo Bhava means, you know, be somebody for whom mother is God. So in other words, mother actually is the highest. She comes really immediately after Krishna is mother. Then Pitru Devo Bhava, be somebody for whom the father is like God. Then Achayu Devo Bhava, be somebody for whom the teacher is like God. And Atiti Devo Bhava, be somebody for whom the guest is like God, respected, you know. But Matru Devo Bhava is the top, you know. That's actually the position of mother. Highest position, highest, because of her mood of selfless love and service. You see? That's why Prabhupada was always saying, mother's love is the purest love in this material world. Even though, of course, it's not completely pure, because also mothers have, you know, some emotional attachments, some subtle expectations, and. But because she sacrifices, like anything, 24 hours a day, serve. Mother has that mood, I am last, everybody else is first. Right? You know? When it's meal times, prasadam times, first or everybody else gets their plate full there, and then the mother just eats all the leftovers from everybody's plates, you know? After everybody else is satisfied, up to the neck, she eats whatever is left over. You know? So that's mother's mood. You know, I am last, everybody else comes first. Yes. Also, mother's mood is no showing off, no sexual vibes. Yes. Then she's not mother. Mother means no sexual energy there and agitation. Then she's not mother. She's something else. Yeah? Confirmed. Yes. So all these things are lost and forgotten, you know, in the modern days. That's the point. So understanding all this, I think it's very clear that some people don't like to be called mother. You know? I mean, that's the topic, how to address a woman, you know. So, and some women really, I mean, I know a few, I'm not going to mention any names here, but I know a few that they go mad, they jump to the ceiling when you call them Mataji. Don't call me mother, I'm not your mother, I'm not the baby machine. You know, and all kinds of amazing comments you hear. Yes, I mean, maybe it's also connected with the fact that maybe they have a very traumatic experience of their own mother, that they have never experienced what it means to have a caring mother. You know, they have some real nightmare there when they remember their mother, and they can't, you know, so that's how sometimes some undigested emotional experiences which we have not worked through, they can completely block us, you know. So if we have some undigested experience from our childhood with a horrible mother and we have not worked through this, then this can really block us, and then if somebody calls us Mataji, then we explode, Yes. So, I mean, understanding this, how different the position of mother is in materialistic culture and spiritual culture, I think it's very easily understandable why some amongst us have a problem with this, because obviously we carry that conditioning with us, that mother is nothing and pitiful condition, and then they don't like to be called mother, Clear, isn't it? I was once sharing with Bhaktivedya Purna Swami, that even as a preacher, I'm always serving in that mood of mother. You see? So we're not only talking about the physical mother, but simply the mood of mother. That's why there's all these different mothers. Mother, wife of Brahmana, and. So they're simply playing that mood of caretaker, harmonizer, balancing, the affectionate, caring energy there, So and when I shared that with Bhaktivedya Purna Swami, how I'm working a lot with a man actually in Bangladesh, with the boys, in spiritual culture works very nicely. If the men see a woman only as mother and nothing else, and she behaves like mother, it's actually very natural and very sweet and very nice, So I was once telling him, how I'm like serving like the mother of hundreds of brahmacharis and student boys there in Bangladesh. And he was, laughing and exclaiming, yes, as mother, you can control hundreds of brahmacharis, but if you try and be Prabhu, how many can you control then? Not a single one. That was his comment, Of course, we are not interested in controlling brahmacharis here, that's not the point. But he simply tried to make that point, how much mother's mood, that mother's mood actually controls. It's a much higher level of control, through that service and motherly care, you can actually really have a deep impact on people's hearts. Yesterday I was sharing how this brahmachari was saying to me, yes, our Guru Maharaj is our father, you are our mother, and mother more important. And he said, yes, mother more affection. And that made me understand, yes, if we women play our role as mothers deeply and purely, we can be more prominent in people's lives than the Diksha Guru. I mean, what else does a woman want, Isn't it? Of course, here again, because, we are so far away from spiritual culture, we have to be very careful in this, trying to be the mother now, because we have not cultivated this whole understanding of woman being only mother, right? In Bangladesh, this is a completely different story. There none of the boys have ever had a relationship with a woman except mother. They don't know anything else. It's very natural for them. And there's that respect there, and treating a woman like mother, but here this is not there. So again, we cannot just apply that and say, okay, let me just be a mother here to the man and the yatra or something. No. First we have to become true mothers, which means, deeply understanding and applying all these principles of chastity, shyness, this, that, we have to be firmly situated. We cannot be in some needs, some unfulfilled emotional needs. We have to be protected. It's a whole thing, and then maybe, we can more play that function of mother, So we are far away at the moment from this, unfortunately. So now we all know Chanakya Pandit gives this famous thing, you know. All men should see every woman except his own wife as mother. Well, and obviously, you know, if we women don't allow the men to call us Madhaji, it's going to make it hard for them to develop that vision of seeing every woman as mother. It doesn't even, you know, it doesn't even make sense, you know. Obviously, the men have to call the woman mother in order to cultivate that vision of mother, right? Yes. So I've got a few quotes here. I will just read a couple since we don't have so much time. Prabhupada in one Bhagavad Gita lecture in 1973, he says, so therefore the first training is given to become austere, tolerate, how to call other women as mother. He is learning from the beginning a small child. He is trained up to call any woman, even of his own age, not sister, mother. This is the training, Matrivat Paradarishu. This is education, Matrivat Paradarishu. Chanakya Pandit, the great politician, has given the definition of a learned scholar. Who is a learned scholar? He has given the definition. What is this? Matrivat Paradarishu. To see every woman except his wife as mother. This is education. This is education, perfection of education. When you can see all women except your wife as mother. This is education. And there's a few more quotes. I want to read the one Bhagavad Gita lecture in 74. This was 73, 74, one more. And they used to call every woman from the beginning of life, mother. From beginning of life. Right? This is training, Matrivat Paradarishu. From the very beginning of life, all women, they are treated as mother. That is the system, Vedic system. Everyone will call a woman as mother. Never mind whether she is younger or older. It doesn't matter. Woman has to be addressed as mother. That is Chanakya Pandit's instruction. Who is learned scholar? Who has got three qualifications? He is learned scholar. What is that? Matrivat Paradarishu. To treat all women as mother. Nowadays it has been introduced in India. Bahinji means sister. No, this is not the etiquette. The etiquette is to address every woman, never mind whether she's young or old, as mother. Wow, there you go. Very clear. He says it so many times. You look up in the folio program, you get so many references, you know, where Prabhupada again and again and again and again he says it, you know. So now the culture is indeed like this, that even a father will call his two-year-old daughter Ma, mother. A father will call his own daughter like this. Right? Yes. That's the culture. It's not a physical thing, obviously. You know, Prabhupada says it's from beginning of life. No matter how old she is, she's mother. You see? So it's got nothing to do, or she's so young, how can she be my mother? No, oh, so external and shallow understanding. Now we're talking about the mood of mother. And because the mothers are the most important personalities in human society, that's why all girls are trained right from very young age to take up and imbibe this mood of mother, because it's such an important role. Right? That's why a father calls his own daughter even Ma, mother, just to help her to grow into that role very naturally, to be a mother. Yes, interesting, isn't it? So, since I'm understanding all of this more deeply now, I call every woman Manaji, doesn't matter how old she is. That's not the issue. You know, even we women amongst each other, we call each other Manaji just to remind each other that we should play this role of mother. That's why. Even if she's younger, even if she's a new bhaktin, doesn't matter. Still it's mother. And it might be it takes a little while to get used to it, but it's just the mind, it's just the conditioning. Once you just do it, it comes completely natural. It doesn't take long. You know? So even the young girls there, they should be called mother, Madhuri. Just to make sure that they will be very good and nice mothers one day. Yes.
Okay, to address a woman also in our language,
Michael.
In our language.
Yes, why not? In German they do that, and in Germany they say Mutter. Yeah, why not? And interestingly, you will find this in every religion, in every spiritual culture. Mother Teresa, you know, that the women are always called mother.
But Mother Teresa is called after mother in Bangladesh, in fact. Here is no tradition to call nuns mothers.
Isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Sisters, not mothers.
Oh, it's sisters. Sister,
mother,
is it?
Mother is the main one in monastery.
The chief one is mother, and the others are sisters, is it?
Yeah. Yes, they have been in Bangladesh.
What to do? I thought in Christianity it was also mother. I thought, but maybe I'm wrong.
So
maybe
they call each other brother.
Oh yeah, that's true. Yeah, they call each other brother. So they don't have the highest knowledge there and understanding. See, another thing in regards to this whole issue of Prabhu, you know, Prabhu or Madhaji, how to call a woman. Interesting to understand, you know, that in spiritual culture, the women have this high function of first guru creating the spiritual atmosphere in the house, and they're losing that in materialistic culture, right? Like the men are losing their heroic role there of protecting the women are losing their foremost contribution to humanity of being first guru and creating the spiritual atmosphere. It doesn't count. No demand for that. So that falls away. So in materialistic culture, a mother or woman is just reduced to be the cook and cleaner. Right? So, and of course, a woman's not going to be satisfied with that. She wants to contribute more than just being a cook and cleaner. And that is one reason why women are entering the workforce also, you know, like my Brahmacharini friend goes back to university, you know, because she feels, oh, I'm just a mother in a household, I'm just a cook and cleaner, the mundane concept, you know, yes. So that is one reason why women are looking for a new venue to get some appreciation and recognition. You know? Because they're losing the spiritual function. That's right. So now, in my understanding, this thing of calling women Prabhu, it is just some feeble attempt to re-establish the respect a woman should be getting. You know? Because in materialistic culture, she just became the cook and cleaner and this and that and not protected and so on. So, and just, it's some helpless attempt there to give her more respect. People feel she should be more respected. She's not getting actually that respect she should be getting. So that's why this whole idea comes in that we should call the women Prabhu. You know? But that gets us even further away from spiritual culture. You know? And that brings in the whole equality thing, or the men are Prabhu, so the women also have to be Prabhu, you know. And then another interesting thing is that actually a mother is always master. She is always Prabhu, but she's much more than that, actually. You know? Because mother's mood includes master, but it also includes that selfless, affectionate service, which in master is not there. You see? Like in the four main rasas, Dasya, Sakya, Vatsalya, Madhurya. You know? Vatsalya includes Dasya and Sakya, and it is more than that. It is Vatsalya. So a mother is always master, but she's much more than master. You know? That's why in spiritual culture, a woman would not be very happy if she was addressed as Prabhu. She would feel minimized as Prabhu. Right? Because mother is much more than Prabhu. You know? You understand? Yes. Yes. Mother, I mean, even within a family, you know, the father, the husband, he's the official family head. But let's be clear, who runs the show at home? It's the mother. Yes. See? And on a higher level, it is also there in human society, you know? So the men, they're officially the heads, they take charge, lead, provide, protect. But the women have the main influence, actually, through their powerful energy, as we discussed yesterday. No.
Can I just say something?
Yes.
There's a saying that man is the head in the family and the woman is the neck who turns the head.
Okay, wow, I've never heard that one before. Yeah. But very carefully. don't put the neck out of place, you know? through her devoted service, she turns the head. Only like that, you know? Nothing else, not by telling him what to do and what not to do. And finally, also, another thing is that obviously, if every man, even father, calls even his daughter Ma, mother, that also protects the children from possible child abuse. You see? Yes. Hopefully, he will think twice, you know, if he's doing something inappropriate there or something, you know, if he calls her mother, you know, yes. Yeah, so this whole, you know, Prabhu, you know, it just shows that we don't have deeper insights in spiritual culture, you know. Then we would understand that mother is always topmost Prabhu anyway, and she is so much more than that, you know. Yes. Apart from the fact that linguistically, in Sanskrit language, Prabhu is always male. It's always a male declination. It cannot be female. It's wrong. That's why they came up with Pravi. Right? Yeah, I sometimes get letters. Dear Devaki Pravi. Yes. Yes. I mean, you know, and all ladies, you know, would we say Radharani Prabhu? You know? Srimati Radharani is Prabhu? No. She's Sri, you know? Srimati. All the demigods, they're all mothers. They're not Prabhu, you know? Doesn't make any sense, you know? Yes. Okay. Yes, I think we have gone through most things.
Can I ask a question?
I'm not so sure. Let me just hang on for a minute. Yes. So anyway, you know, here on your sheet, you also, I mentioned it already once, But mother means there's no room for sexual relationship, no room for sexual vibrations, you know. So we do have to learn and cultivate this mood of mother. Yeah, only then the men can also cultivate the mood of seeing every woman as mother if she behaves as mother. You know? Yes. Otherwise, we don't make it very easy for them, you know? Okay. Yes, I think we basically went through most things here. Okay. Yes.
Can you tell us, please, the meaning of Shrimati? Mati is also mother?
No. Yeah.
The meaning of Shrimati.
Mother.
Yes.
Shri is like Mrs. Mother.
Mataji. Mataji is my dear mother. Mata is mother. Ma is mother. Mm-hmm. Mati, I assume, also Shrimati, is a very respectful way of a motherly address.
Mm-hmm. More respectful than Mataji? No.
I think so. Shrimati. Yes. I think Shrimati is more respectful than just Mataji. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, we don't call Radharani Mataji. Mm-hmm. We call her Shrimati. Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. So obviously it's more respectful, you know?
Is it okay to call ourselves Shrimati or no?
Maybe no need.
No. Okay.
I mean, I have seen it on letters, you know, on the envelope, like His Grace, Her Grace, you know, on the letter we write Her Grace, Devi Dasi. You know, but we don't address each other, or Your Grace, you know, they would be a little over the top, you know. So it's a similar thing. Instead of Her Grace, you can also write Shrimati. Devi Dasi. I've seen that on letters, you know, addressed to Shrimati, and. But that doesn't necessarily mean we call each other like this, you know? So no need to invent new things, let's just stick to Mataji, you know? Only if it's a little one.
But important.
Just so I can have a drink of water. Yeah, it's okay. I have. So let her ask a question.
Thank you. When I came to Krishna consciousness before 7 years, I heard and I have read that a woman in Vaishnavism is more worthy than men. Is it true?
Well, we discussed it all. Yeah. And we yesterday, half the day, we spent on the topic. It's not more worthy. It's not more worthy, but her role is super important. Let's keep it at that. The power of the feminine energy. Not more worthy, you know?
I heard.
No, it's not more worthy, you know? We said she's the spine and the men are the head, and you need both. The head needs the spine needs the head. You know?
But I heard that in the future matter heart very important in the world because it.
Anyway, this whole matriarchat and patriarchat, it's both, you know? It's just not understanding Krishna's system. Then people go through the matriarchat and patriarchat. No, Krishna's system is both playing their roles. No need to go from one extreme to the other. It's both together. Okay, let's quickly distribute Yes.
How to understand some of Srila Prabhupada's letters addressing his disciples as Prabhu?
That's the only thing that is a little, you know, confusing to some people. I have not seen letters, but I know, like Yadubar Prabhu told me that he was in the room when Prabhupada addressed his wife as Prabhu. So who am I to speculate? You know, I have not seen anything in Prabhupada's books or lectures or conversations. There he says what we read, you know, every woman should be addressed as mother. He says it again and again and again. I have never read that he says woman should be addressed as Prabhu, you know. But I know that a few instances, and it's only a very few, I talked to quite a few Prabhupada disciples about this, because this is an issue now in the GBC meetings, you know. Shiva Swami put a proposal in to finally clarify this point, you know, how to address a woman, because it's creating tension. You know? And the tension is basically the different cultures. That's where the tension comes from, you know? Yes. Yeah, there's quite a bit of a gap between different sections of ISKCON and, you know, all the Indian Bengali leaders and the Western leaders and so on. Some of the culture creates a gap, you know. Yes. Yeah, so, well, as we said, Prabhupada did so many amazing things, you know, to start Krishna consciousness, and obviously you could see that, especially in that time, America was not ready for spiritual culture. You know? I don't know, I don't want to further speculate. But, yes. I mean, it was the heights of the whole women's liberation thing, you know? So obviously, you know, Prabhupada would not want to, you know, confront the day of the materialist with the day of the spiritualist, you know. I guess he just left that work for us, you know. So we also have something to do, you know. Yeah, but that is the whole thing, you know, that there's some group of devotees who say, well, Prabhupada said, Prabhupada called me Prabhu, so obviously this, you know. But then what is he saying? Again and again he's saying, you know, it's mother. You know? So I rather go what he writes in his books and preaches in his letters than what he says maybe to one or two or three persons, you know. And maybe he wanted to, you know, teach that women should be respected. Because in the early days of ISKCON there was that misuse of the philosophy and the women were put down and disrespected and so on, you know. That could also be one reason that he simply wanted to reestablish the respect a woman should get, you know. Yes. Okay. We are running short in time. Now we have to do a whole lesson, which we usually use 3 hours for. You know, we have 45 minutes left. So we can't take any more questions now. Do we have this also in Croatian? Where is it? Oh, here. Only very few. Huh? So quickly, let's give this out. This is Croatian. This is English, and here also English.
English.
Also, just... So let's hang on. Shh, oi. Let's just settle down and focus and continue. Just one last little comment about this whole topic of mother. You know, we do have this big outcry in ISKCON, oh, there is a lack of care, devotee care for the devotees. So obviously, if we women don't want to be called mothers, I think it's very clear that there has to be a lack of care, you know? I do think there is a connection there, you know? Because who are the ones who care? It's the mothers. But if you don't want to identify with that role, and we rather want to be the Prabhu, you know, then, oh well, there will be obviously a lack of care, you know? Yeah, that's very clear, you know? Okay, so, lesson number 5. A few hot issues to finish off the course. Are women less intelligent? Ooh, another heated topic. So let us, it's actually very simple. Let us understand the spirit soul is covered by the gross body of earth, water, fire, air, ether, and the subtle body of mind, intelligence, false ego. So intelligence is nothing else but a material element of the subtle material body. It's just part of the material subtle body, intelligence. But because we identify so much with our intelligence, and this intelligence is so blown up in material life to be so super important, that's why, oh, we get so offended if we hear women are less intelligent. It's just bodily concept. Women also, as a rule, have smaller feet. Right? Usually we don't get so upset about that. Oh, it's just the feet, no problem, you know? Okay, men have bigger feet, sure, no problem. But the intelligence, you know? Because we identify so much with it. We think it's so important, we're so proud of it. We're not so proud of our shoe size, you know, and our size of the feet, but intelligence, you know, is so important for us, and that's why we get so agitated. But it's actually the same thing, as if we get all upset and hung up when we hear all men as a rule have bigger feet. Yes, it's kind of a humorous way of making the point, you know? Yes. It's just bodily concept, nothing else. Yes. I mean, there's that funny little story when also some reporter asked Prabhupada, so your philosophy is saying that women are less intelligent. What is your comment about this? And Prabhupada says, yes, as long as they think they're women. In other words, as long as they identify with the body, yes, they are less intelligent. That's the whole point. You know? Yes. So, and as we know, subtle body of mind, intelligence, false ego, if we want to go back to God, it has to be dissolved, has to be given up. So, I'm always making this joke, it's an advantage if it's a little smaller. It's less work to dissolve it, right? You don't even get the point. If we have less intelligence, it's an advantage because it's less work to dissolve it and give it up, right? Because subtle body has to be dissolved anyway. So it's like we have an advantage here, yes. Just as a joke. But no, it's not even so much a joke only, it is a fact. Prabhupada says in one purport, that these four principles of material advancement, which is aristocratic family, higher education, here we have it, good wealth, and bodily beauty, there are, so to speak, disadvantages in material progress because they usually lead to pride very easily. Yes, so that's why it is a blessing not to be so super smart and intelligent, because very easily we get proud, and proud person, well, has a hard time in making progress, you know? Yeah, so it is an advantage. Here we have a little quote from a lecture. In 68, that was pretty early, Prabhupada says, I was student of psychology in my college life. Dr. Urquhart said, I remember still, that the brain substance has been found up to 64 ounces, while brain substance of woman has been found highest 34 ounces. By the way, most of the brain substance is not used anyway. So if you have a little more unused brain substance or less, it actually doesn't make much difference, you know? Just to make that clear. Therefore, women as a class, and Prabhupada laughs, is not so intelligent as men. There is no question of competition. It is actual scientific fact. But one thing I must explain here, so far as spiritual life is concerned, it does not depend on the material brain substance or material intelligence. It is a different thing. It is a spiritual platform. It has nothing to do with its bodily construction. Right? Clear? Mm-hmm. Yes. You must remember, we don't make any distinction that a man can be better Krishna consciousness than woman. No, a woman can be better Krishna consciousness because they are very simple. They can accept any religious system. Generally, the women, they accept it because they are very simple. They have no crooked mind. Sometimes they are exploited, therefore. So in the spiritual platform, there is no such distinction. Although in the material. Just like the bodily construction of a man is different from woman, similarly the brain substance may be also different, but that does not disqualify any woman for spiritual advancement in Krishna consciousness. So, very clear. Just a bodily thing, as if we get upset that the men have stronger muscles and shoulders and, all right, he's got more brain substance. It doesn't mean anything, you know? But because we are identifying so much with the intelligence, that's why, you know, it's such a heated discussion. You know? Yes. Also, woman's body means stronger bodily identification. It comes along with a sports car, you know, that powerful energy bringing in that beauty and color and so on, you know, into life. I mean, wouldn't life be boring if all human beings had a male nature? Would be pretty boring, right? In gray and square, you know. So the whole female nature brings that beauty and color in, you know. And, you know, because we bring along that energy in nature, we get a little affected by it. And we get attached. Similar like the demigods often get attached and affected by their roles they're playing. You know? So same way, driving this sports car here, we get simply affected by the energy. And it's also, in one sense, it's really part of women's nature, because if women would not be more attached to the body, then they would not naturally have that inclination to make themselves beautiful and attractive and colorful, right? So it's all part of it, you know? It's all part of it. So, you know, It means, so woman's body, women are more on the bodily concept. They're more attached to bodily beauty, decorations, externals, and so on. And another thing, why women are considered less intelligent is the fact that the emotional nature of women easy cloudies the vision. Yes, the emotions get in our way and our vision is clouded and distorted and we overreact. Right? And that is even going on in the Bhagavatam. We have that nice story with Shiva and Parvati. Do you want a 5-minute break or can you continue? Yes, I have the feeling somehow some of you are getting a little tired here.
Because
huh?
of the topic.
Huh?
It's because of the topic.
Is it?
No. Maybe 5 minutes.
No. It's up to you.
We can manage.
Eastern Kanem with Adriana, the story.
We'll manage. We'll just pull it through. In the Bhagavatam, we have this famous story. Yeah, open the window. Good idea. Oh, yeah, a bit of fresh air for me here too. Yeah, in the Bhagavatam, we have this famous story where Parvati sits on Shiva's lap. Right? In the assembly of saints and sages, Chitraketu comes flying past. He's making some joking remarks. Oh, my dear Lord Shiva, is this the way you should be sitting there with your wife on your lap? And Shiva doesn't react. He simply smiles. He understands Chitraketu's mind and mood. He's just joking. But Parvati overreacts. She flips out, in other words. She, oh, you know, she gets all... chastises heavily Chitraketu and she curses him to take birth as a demon, you know. So, and there's a very heavy purport where Prabhupada says, maybe I should read it. It's a real beauty. Under W for women. Let me see where it is. Here. Prabhupada says, listen carefully. This is 6 canto, 17 chapter, 34-35.
Can you repeat,
please? 6:17, 34-35. Prabhupada says, it's just the main part of the purport. Here is the difference between male and female that exists even in the higher status of life. In fact, even between Lord Shiva and his wife. Lord Shiva could understand Chitraketu very nicely, but Parvati could not. Thus, even in the higher statuses of life, there is a difference between the understanding of a male and that of a female. It may be clearly said that the understanding of a woman is always inferior to the understanding of a man. In the Western countries, Prabhupada knows exactly what's going on. In the Western countries, there is now agitation to the effect that man and woman should be considered equal. But from this verse, it appears that woman is always less intelligent than man. Ooh, so heavy. So, I mean, first of all, let's understand, you know, it's not that any man's vision is superior to any woman's. It's not... I don't understand it like that. But if you have a man and woman who are compatible of similar caliber, like Shiva and Parvati, they're both not ordinary men and ordinary women, but they're extraordinary men and extraordinary women. But still, even there, man's vision is superior to woman's vision. because of the emotions clouding the vision. That's what happened to Parvati, you know? She overreacted because of emotional attachment to her husband, because she thought that Chitrakirti was, you know, criticizing her husband, but he was just joking. But she took it all to heart and she overreacted, you know? So I'm sure if we are a little honest and humble, we have so many examples of our life where we overreact, you know, and we jump to conclusions and we imagine the worst and you know. And that's another reason why women should be protected. That's why we need that rational male view who says, just relax, it's okay, sleep it over, we'll work it all out, don't worry, you know, right? I'm sure we've all been in such situations, right? Haven't we? Yes, yes. So, and that is another reason why woman is considered to be less intelligent, because of this emotional nature clouding the vision and then not being able to clearly see what is going on. Yeah. And if men, sometimes men are very emotional, they have the same thing too, you know, so it's not just for women, but whenever we are very emotional, we will have that problem, that we will not be able to see things as they are, you know. Yes.
Just want to ask what you think, that if you think maybe that also those emotional life can be developed and they exist like term like emotional intelligence, and if we work on this, we can handle better emotions and vision and having, you know, like.
Let's just play the role we are meant to play. You know, rather than.
Yes, but if I don't have any man behind me, and if I have even then I want to rely on me, because it's not realistic that in some situations if I got to some, I don't know, odd situation with my emotions who really can really sensitive, it's realistic that I learn how to handle it.
See, one thing is, I'm just going to give a very general answer to this. How to word it. If, you know, if we are driving a female vehicle here, and we are not really using it with its nature and qualities in Krishna service, that's what gives us the purification. You see? So if we, it's a good point to clarify anyway, if we are kind of playing the male role now, let's say even in married life, sometimes people say to me, okay, you are on this trip of traditional roles, but sorry, you know, in our marriage, the husband plays the woman's role and the wife plays the male role and works fine for us, no problem. So, but the topic is, the point is, we are not interested to somehow have some working marriage. No, we want purification. And if the woman plays the man's role, she's not going to be able to dissolve her false ego. She's going to be out there, you know. Good chance that Krishna will reward her a male body in the next life so she can fulfill her desires and get the perfect body to go with it, you know? So she can use that propensity in Krishna's service. You see? That's the point. So that's why it's advisable as much as possible to really play the role, do the purifying duty we are meant to play. Because also in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, better to do one's own duty imperfectly than somebody else's duty perfectly. You know? So even a woman might be the perfect breadwinner here and earn so much more money, but too bad, it's actually not her purifying duty. She's not meant to play that role. That's the whole point, you see? So that's why, you know, not so advisable to do all these courses in order to, you know, equip oneself to do the role which we are not meant to play, well, you just gearing up for your male body there then, you know? You know what I mean? So, I'm sorry, I cannot really advise this, you know? But better to somehow try and play that subordinate role, you know, and put ourselves below. Otherwise, how will the ego be dissolved? You know? Then we have to take another birth and play the role as a man, and then we can do all the leading things and be guru and do this and that, you know? Yeah, so there must be some way how any person in a female body can find some ways to, you know, do her purifying duty. You know? I'm convinced of this. Sometimes when the conditioning is very strong, it might be harder, but still, I think it's still worth trying, you know? Mm-hmm. Yes, I think so. What, you wanted to ask something? Oh, I don't even dare to look at the word. Yes.
I wanted to share, maybe because of everyone, that the same topic we have in discussion in yesterday's lunch break.
Okay.
And Mataji told me that one Prabhu, what's his name?
Audarya Dhamma Prabhu.
Okay.
Audarya Dhamma, yes. Prabhu explains it very well, because I asked, okay, in this seminar it goes out like woman is the only one who needs to work on something all the time. But then I said, but probably on the men's seminar, men also...
Yes, of course.
Yeah, that they also had to work.
Yes.
And then she said that Audarya Prabhu says that in male body we collect karma, and in woman's body we get rid of karma. It's the topic. So,
Now, I think that's a misunderstanding, you know? In both bodies, we collect karma if we don't surrender to Krishna. And as we surrender unto Krishna, Krishna takes the karma and puts it on the back burner. And just in case, if we leave Krishna consciousness, he lets us have it back. You know, that's the system. Not in the male body we collect karma, and the woman's body... No, come on. That's not from Prabhupada's books, you know? No. I'm sorry, I cannot agree with that. Maybe it's a misunderstanding, maybe he said it differently or something. You know, it's like... You know, No, see, we said yesterday how the men's deal is a tougher one because they have to lead and take charge, but as humble servant. And how the male ego gets purified by having to cooperate with other men. You know? So, both have their share, both have their difficulties. You know? But obviously, because the woman's position is so important, and it is all lost and forgotten. That's why this course is all about women. It's not that only the women have to do something and the men don't. No, the course is simply giving insight into the highly important position of women and mothers. And the men need to have that insight and the women need to have that insight. It's going here only about getting insight into Krishna's system. We are not getting on the women's case how what they all have to do and only they, it's all their fault or something. No, it's simply giving insights into Krishna's system. You know, if the male energy was so powerful and the men were so important and they were the backbone of the whole society, then the cause would be all about men. But it's the women. So that's why the cause is about women. Right? Hmm? Clear? Yes? Yeah. That's why in the men's course, I first only called it men and spiritual culture. And then some people said, huh, this cause was all about women, you know. So what about the man? And I said to them, well, I cannot give a cause to the man about the man, you know. That a man has to give. My function is to tell them all about women. So then I added the subtitle, what men always wanted to know about women. I never even thought of asking. Just to make it clear, this course is about women, you know, because some people are also scratching their head, huh? Now we have a woman giving a course to the man about men, what is this? Now it's all about women, and who else can explain it better than a mother? A mother has to explain this, you know? A man cannot really give this course, actually, because it's all about women, you know? Okay. Yeah, some little examples of the Shastra illustrating that it is an advantage for spiritual life to be in a woman's body. The gopis, the brahmanas' wives, you know? Brahmanas' wives, when Krishna was and Balaram was hungry, the brahmanas were too busy with their yakyas. But the brahmanas' wives, yes, of course, Krishna's hungry. Here, we have food for him, you know. Or when Krishna has a headache and he says, collect the dust of my devotees, and the brahmanas, the men, oh, what, my dust for my feet, for Krishna, forget it, I will go to hell. But the gopis, yes, you can have tons of dust. If that cures Krishna's headache, you can have it, you know. So these are nice, sweet little examples which illustrate that actually, you know, it's an advantage to be in a woman's body, actually. And as Prabhupada says it too, you know, women are very simple, they take up very easily any religious process and so on, you know. Okay. Let us move on to the last two topics. One is, can women lead kirtan or give class?
Obviously.
So we have Bhaktivinoda Thakur's statement on this. He says, shifting from one room to another, one end to another, he says, women who are pure devotees can become traveling women salesmen for distributing the holy name amongst other women, but they cannot give the name to men. According to time, place, and circumstances, however, and with great care, a cautious and mature woman can distribute the name to men. Right? Apart from elderly women or very young girls, men preachers should avoid discussions with other women. That's just a little etiquette thing, you know, that this is going on a lot in the name of preaching. You know, the men are just discussing with young, beautiful women here, but, you know, so that's why Bhaktivinoda Thakur says this should not go on. Only with elderly women or young girls. It doesn't mean, of course, the class or anything, but it's just the general etiquette, you know, just to make sure, you know, in the name of preaching, there's not something else going on. So, Bhaktivinoda Thakur makes it very clear, you know. In general, he says, you know, traveling women salesmen, meaning preachers, basically, can distribute the holy name to women. Distribute the holy name, I understand it as preaching, lecturing and kirtan. That's giving the holy name, you know. Ultimately, any preaching should have that ultimate goal of giving the holy name, right? So, in general, you know, if she is a pure devotee, she can only preach to women. That's the general rule. But then, according to time, place, and circumstance, if she you know, does it with great care. Of course, she has to be a pure devotee. With great care, cautious and mature woman can also preach to men. Yeah? So it's not, we cannot make rules. A woman cannot give class. A woman cannot. This is bodily platform. You know? But understanding all the little things, you know, especially understanding the powerful feminine energy, you know, we said if a woman behaves badly or makes a show more contaminating, so obviously that's already one reason, you know, if a woman is there making a show, leading a kirtan, showing off, much more contaminating. Yes. So now, let us understand why would it be difficult sometimes, you know, for a man to hear from a woman, knowing all the different things we discussed. So let's apply it. Why is it maybe difficult for men to hear from a woman? Yes?
Because of his inbuilt nature that he is in the front.
Yes. That's one thing, you know, that for men in general, not so easy to accept advice. Although, if she is much older and really like a mother, then I often find it's easier also for men to accept from a motherly person than from a mother other man. Between men, there's often, when it comes to personal things, there's often the male ego is blocking, you know? And from a motherly person, men often can accept personal instruction or correction easier. But to hear, you know, the male ego rebels a bit because he feels actually I should be sitting there and I should be giving the class, you know, and not she, you know, because he wants to take charge and be in the front. So that's one reason. What other reason is there? No questions now. What are the other reasons?
Woman's looks.
Yeah, so obviously if she's young and beautiful, he's just going to be distracted and just looking at her body, you know, obviously. And actually in India when I gave this course, one Mataji was saying, well, even I would be distracted because of this whole competition amongst women, you know, if there's... And it's a fact, you know. So if there's a woman sitting there on the Vyasasana, even we women will be maybe a little distracted, checking her out, what she got on and this and that, you know. And this Mataji in India, she was saying, yeah, it would take me quite a while to settle down. You know, and even I would check her out. What to speak of a man, you know. Huh? So another thing is, that to sit on the Vyasasana, it's not just a piece of furniture there, you know, it is actually the Vyasasana representing Vyasadeva. So obviously, to represent Vyasadeva, there has to be some maturity there in spiritual life. There has to be a little bit off the bodily concept, you know? Otherwise, how can we really sit there on the Vyasasana, you know? Being all decorated with bangles and earrings and makeup and lipstick, and then talking about the bodily platform of life, you know, it doesn't really go so well, you know. Yes. Yeah, it doesn't go so well.
But then we make many offenses too.
We make offenses? What? Sitting on the Vyasasana?
Like
huh?
By thinking like that.
The audience?
Yes.
Yes, so it's somewhat a little inappropriate. I mean, once I mentioned this to the devotees in Bangladesh, that in the West, you know, women sit on the Vyasasana with silk saris and bangles and makeup, and they were cracking up laughing, you know, they couldn't imagine it, you know, yes. Because there, that culture is still there like this, that a woman, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, you know, she has to be cautious, mature, great care. You know, there has to be a certain seniority has to be there, you know. That's the thing, you know. Yes. And I mean, this is also there in regards to men, too. Like, I know one preacher, you know, he has dyed hair. A man. Colored hair. And earrings. And this is very popular. People love him. But, well, I'm sorry, for me, very difficult to hear from such a person. A man, preacher, having dyed hair, blonde hair, when he's not blonde naturally. You know, and then he sits on the Vyasasana and talks about the bodily concept. You know, I mean, nah, come on, let's be serious, you know. Yes, but people don't even think about this, you know. So I'm simply mentioning this just to make the point, it's not only for women, but that standard is also for men there. They have to also be a little mature and a little bit off the bodily platform. You know, otherwise it's just going to be a rush or bust there, you know, it's not proper, you know. And I mean, just to share from my own experience, not that I always want to talk about myself or something, but actually intuitively I practiced this. While I was married, I was never ever sitting on the Vyasasana. I was giving every week a women's program. Every week, but not from the Vyasasana, you see. And I was conducting Sankirtan meetings, Pujari meetings with a mixed audience, but not from the Vyasasana. Also, because my former husband was the temple president, and I did not want to compete with him, you know. I wanted to leave that up to him to sit on the Vyasasana. Intuitively, I did not have any training in this. But intuitively, I felt, no, let this be his thing, you know. And then only when he left and I started wearing white, then I thought, all right, you know, now maybe it's time to give a Bhagavatam class, you know. So intuitively, I actually practice this myself. And this is what I usually recommend to women also, that women should just preach to women. As Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, you know, why do we want to give class, you know, in front of men? You know, why, if we are insisting on this, then already it sounds like some material motive there or something, you know. So why not just preach to women and qualify ourselves, you know, more than half the congregation is usually women, so there's no shortage on preaching to women. You know, and then in due course of time, when we become a little mature, more renounced, a little bit elderly, a little wrinkly and saggy, so then, you know, then maybe the time will come where we can also preach to a general audience or something, you know. Especially from the Vyasasana. It's still a different thing when we have some public preaching program on the stage or something. Different category, you know. Then the standard Bhagavatam class in the temple room or something from the Vyasasana, you know. Like Prabhupada, very often he had his lady disciples give speeches and on some public programs, but I've heard Prabhupada disciples telling me that most can't even hardly remember that a woman was sitting on the Vyasasana giving lecture. It was rare. Definitely not in Prabhupada's presence, you know? Yes, yes. There is a nice letter where Prabhupada comments on this topic. In 68, quite early, he's saying, regarding lecturing by woman devotees, I have informed you that in the service of the Lord there is no distinction of caste or creed, color or sex. In the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord especially mentions that even a woman who has taken seriously is also destined to reach him. We require a person who is in the knowledge of Krishna. That is the only qualification of a person speaking. It doesn't matter what he is, Materially, a woman may be less intelligent than a man, but spiritually there is no such distinction. Because spiritually everyone is pure soul. In the absolute plane, there is no such gradation of higher and lower. If a woman can lecture nicely and to the point, we should hear her carefully. That is our philosophy. But if a man can speak better than a woman, then man should be given first preference. But even though a woman is less intelligent, a sincere soul should be given proper chance to speak, because we want so many preachers, both men and women. So basically the key sentence is, you know, if a woman can lecture nicely and to the point, so why is it sometimes not so easy for women to lecture to the point?
That's in all into details.
And why?
Bodily.
Huh?
She's conditioned by her nature, emotion.
Emotional nature, yes. The emotional nature often makes it difficult for women to speak to the point, because emotions tend to, you know, you get lost in details and, you know? Yes. So, very clear, you know? It's again that tendency for emotional nature, which makes it, yeah, more difficult. I mean, when we had this mother's program in Mayapur, I was looking for some senior ladies who would speak something. Sharing some, not giving a whole class or anything, but just sharing realizations of the benefit of serving as mother or in the mood of mother. You would not believe how difficult it was for me to find women who were ready to speak because of the emotional nature. You know, nice ladies, senior, everything, so realized. They were saying, oh no, Mataji, sorry, when I stand in front of an audience, especially if there's Maharaj is there, Shivam Swami, Chandramurti Swami, my throat will be choked up, I cannot speak, I'm sorry. I will get all flustered and will not be able to speak. So many, I really had to run around to find three nice ladies, you know, but finally I did, you know. But yeah, that's the emotional nature of women, that's why we don't have so many women, you know, who preach and sit in front of an audience and all that, because the emotions make it harder to deal with that, you know.
Urma Devi does this.
Just, I want to share a personal experience. I have noticed that when women preach to women, especially if they are newcomers, and especially that new Matajis are not married, they cannot accept from me. The same thing, the same basics, for example. They cannot accept from me, they want Prabhupada to tell them they should do the that.
Yes, it's
they
also.
Cannot, they have,
yes.
Like, you know, what would.
It's a
I
fact.
Want him to say that to me, and then I will do that.
Yeah, it's fact. It's no, true. For women, more difficult to be instructed by women than by a man. You know, I guess it is also because of that, you know, envious nature amongst women and that competitiveness and so on. You know. Yes. You wanted to say Urmila Mataji. Well, how many Urmila Matajis do we have in ISKCON? Not so many. Yeah.
And you are guru?
No, I'm not guru. I'm just humble servant. Not guru.
How connected emotions with ego? Because as you said in the morning, when we become like mental and don't want to ask something, or it's connected to what you say, it's hard to represent us public. It's mental then.
Well, you know, mind, intelligence, false ego, so the mental platform is the platform of the mind, you know, feeling, thinking, feeling, willing happens all in the mind, and mind and false ego are very closely connected, you know, very closely, they're all forming the subtle body, so they affect each other. So the mind affects the ego affects the mind, you know?
So if we, in fact, what I meant also before, if we handle sometimes to represent something in public, even if we are not used to, it may be also good for our ego, not only that is just for our emotional nature to stay in it, or it's not for woman's nature, again, to deal with ego in this way.
Well, it depends. See, the ego can always either be fed that, oh, look at me, I'm representing this and this, and oh, I'm so great. You know, then we are feeding and blowing up the ego. So we don't want that. No. No.
But if it is effort just to.
But if we do it in the mood of humble servant, it's a question of consciousness. If we have that mood of, how can I serve? How can I uplift my audience? You know, and not wanting to make a show, you know, then it is purifying, yes. So it depends, you know. Yes. Okay. Let me quickly see if I forgot anything. Oh yes, we haven't talked about kirtan. We only talked about lecture, basically. So, let me ask you, why is it, you know, knowing everything what we... Oh, it's 6 o'clock. Doesn't matter, we'll continue. Knowing, you know, the topics of the past, why is it not so good if a woman leads, or let's ask differently, what effect on the man can it have very easily, especially when a woman leads the standard kirtans in the temple room, like Mangalarti, Tulsi Puja, Guru Puja, you know, Gaur Aarti. What effect can it have on the man?
They concentrate on her sweet voice, not on Krishna.
Yeah, so that's one thing, you know, again, the distraction there, you know, all her beautiful voice, especially if she's also young and attractive, you know, distracting. What else? I mean,
he's not in charge.
Yes, very true, yes. He feels very easily his position as taking charge is jeopardized, you know, it's in danger, it's threatened. Yes, yes, and he feels actually, I should be leading there, you know. And especially if he realizes, oh, she even leads it better, you know, then that makes him insecure, then he's afraid to be the loser in her eyes, and then he says, okay, you better lead, you know, and then he becomes all insecure and wimpy and all that, you know. Yes, yes, it is, you know. So basically, if we want responsible male leadership, obviously, you know, it's helpful if we really allow the man to take those services. Because especially these standing up kirtans, they promote a person as the leader. You know, there's a special potency behind it because you are singing and everybody else is following you. Any temple president knows that it's very helpful for his management if he's a good kirtan leader. Yes, because it supports that leading role. You see? And just by going in the temple room, leading a good kirtan, you know, he can unite the whole congregation behind him. You see? So naturally, if we give that role to a woman then, it weakens the male leadership. Right? Very clear. Very clear. There is still a difference between this you know, standard temple program that Prabhupada established, and some afternoon bhajans, different thing. Even in Mayapur, Vrindavan, Mayapur, they have certain times of certain days when the women lead the kirtan in front of Radha Madhava. In Vrindavan, they have it in Prabhupada Samadhi, the women's kirtan. You know? That's a different thing. The men don't have to come if they don't like it. You know? But the standard kirtans, that's Prabhupada's program. Everybody should be and wants to be there. You know? And, well, as I said in the beginning, we're not establishing some rules here, what a woman should do and not do. I don't know, in your area here, do the women sometimes lead these kirtans?
Yes.
They do? Mm. Well, I'm not saying that they can't, I'm not saying that. The standing up kirtans.
No.
In Croatia, women do not lead kirtans, but in Slovenia, I don't know. But in Croatia, they do not lead kirtans.
Yes, okay, good. So then it will not be so.
Outside. This is a problem in our yatra. Our yatra is very, sorry. Our yatra is very small, and my husband always said to me, you only know to sing, you must to play for you. And we go out, my husband and two girls, and me and some Prabhujis. They don't know to play harmonium.
Anyway, let's not get into some detailed situations here. It's just the general principle. The more we let the man lead, the more we encourage them to be responsible, you know, leaders. If that's what we want, let's not discuss the individual little detailed situations here. Let's understand the principle. Right?
But I don't know how to...
Well, you think about it. You work it out. Understand the principles and work it out. I'm not going to be there working out all the different situations in everybody's life here. Just try and understand the principle. You know? Like, I can share from my own life. When I started traveling preaching, I was leading these standing up kirtans because, well, I didn't have these insights 15 years ago. And I thought, you know, as a traveling preacher, you are expected to do this, especially Ukraine. There's many temples, not so senior devotees. So, you know, when I was visiting, they were inviting me, oh, do you want to lead the Mongolati, this, that, and I was doing it. Even though I was never really feeling so comfortable somehow, intuitively, you know. But I was doing it. So, and then one day, Nirvanjanaswari, he was trying to instruct me. He was not even my guru at the time. But he was, in a very indirect way, he was trying to give me the hint. But I didn't even understand, you know. So what happened, he was saying to me one day, you know, I heard you like to have bhajans before you give the lecture in the evening. And I know many temples don't have a nice harmonium. So if you like, you're welcome to take my harmonium from my room in Kiev, and you can take it all around Ukraine. So he was encouraging me first in these bhajans before lectures and, you know, like that. And then he was saying, but one thing I wanted to tell you, you know, if I would go to a guru puja and a woman would lead that kirtan, I'm sorry, I would not be able to jump up and down with her there. Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada. I'm sorry, I wouldn't be able to do that. I would just go and leave the temple room. He was saying that. And I was thinking, okay, well, obviously, I wouldn't even lead a guru puja if he's there. You know, so why did he tell me this? I didn't even understand, you know. didn't get the point. He was trying to be very careful. So now I still continued leading the kirtans because I didn't get the point, you know. He was too careful. So and so I'm simply sharing this just to show you that sometimes these transformations take quite a few years, you know. That's why I'm telling this, you know. So and then one day in Bangladesh, the devotees, the boys, out of affection, they said to me, "Oh, Mataji, can you lead the Mongol Aarti tomorrow morning?" And I said, "No, forget it. No, no. I'm not going to introduce some modern ideas here into Bangladesh that the women start leading the kirtans here in the temple." And I refused, you know. And I said, "No, no, this is a men's job. You boys, that's your job, you know." So even though, you know, in afternoons or on preaching programs, of course I also sing, you know, but not the standard programs, you know. So and then for quite a few years I was leading this double life, you know. In Bangladesh I would not lead those kirtans, but then in Ukraine or other countries I would. And only when I put these courses together, maybe a year before, I started thinking, why only be cultured in Bangladesh? You know, why not be cultured everywhere? You know, and then I start, you know. And you know, now whenever people invite me, "Oh, you want to lead a kirtan?" And I prefer the men to do it, you know. And I have that experience, how much it encourages the men to take that role of leading. Like when I'm in Kharkov in Ukraine, I usually stay there a couple of weeks or something. So often in the morning program, there's just a handful of bhaktas there. Sometimes they can't even sing properly. I always let them lead. I say, "No," you know, in the beginning they tried to ask me, you know. And I say, "No, you boys lead, you do it," you know. Even if they can't sing properly, doesn't matter. But I can see how this is so encouraging for them, you know, that they feel, "Oh yes, Mataji is asking me to lead, and oh, somehow I managed to do it," you know. Yes, and they feel encouraged and inspired to take up that role. But if I would do it, it would block them, you know. Then forever they would think, "Oh, Mataji can do it better, let her do it." And then they get all insecure and they're afraid to look like a fool and the loser and so on, you know, and then they wouldn't want to lead, you know. Same with the Premadvani prayers, you know, with Jayam Vishnu Paramahamsa, you know. So for many years I used to do this because it's the etiquette that the more senior person does it. And usually, you know, when you visit as a preacher somewhere, they always turn towards you, "Hear Mataji say." Even in Ljubljana we had this pastimes, you know. You were there? But the one senior brahmachari was, "Oh, Mataji, you." And I said, no, Prabhu, you, you know. You. And then he was understanding and okay, you know. Yes. They also, even if the young bhaktas, they don't even know how to do it, say it properly, they have to get a sheet and read it, you know. Let them read, let them practice, let them grow into that role of heading up things, you know, yes. And it really works well, you know, it really inspires the young fellows, young or old or whatever they may be, and it just puts everything into place, you know, and they do respect this so much, you know, if a woman acts like that. Then they recognize, yes, she knows, she understands my nature and how to encourage me. She is my true mother, you know, and they really respect it, yes. But this competitiveness, you know, no good. If we want good male responsible leadership, and I think we all want that, you know, then we have to play our part of being the auspicious source of energy on all levels, not only in marriage, you know. Yes. Okay. Another point, of course, from Vaishnava etiquette is that one should never be so keen on speaking or singing, "Oh, I have to lead." Oof. This is really against etiquette. The mood is, "I am unqualified." everybody else is more qualified. Especially in the presence of senior devotees. One should never show oneself eager to sing or speak. You know, it's very uncultured. Very uncultured. One should always wait until one is invited. You know? Okay. Okay, so very quickly we'll comment on the topic of can a woman be guru?
The most important.
Is it?
Yeah.
Well,
if the answer is no, we will lack so much.
No, see, this is the point. To say no, a woman cannot be guru would be bodily concept. Yes, it's not proper. We have female Diksha gurus in our line. Let's be clear in that. But, you know, remembering the whole purport about the you know, the female vision here, you know, the emotional nature clouding the vision, that makes it clear. In my eyes, this is one of the main reasons why women, as a rule, are not so suitable for the service. Because of this emotional nature, clouding the vision. As long as you're on that emotional platform, as long as a woman is controlled by her emotional, you know, by her female emotions, we cannot uplift a person on the transcendental platform. That's the point, because it's the mental platform. That's the point. Yes. As a rule. But there might be women who are beyond, you know, the mental platform, beyond the female emotions. So, you know, Janava Mata, you know, Ganga Mata Goswamini. But let's understand who they were. They were eternal associates of the Lord. They were obviously beyond them. They were not controlled by their female emotions. That's the whole issue. You know, so qualification has to be there. You know. And that's why maybe Prabhupada said, yes, women gurus will be there, but not so many. You know, I once wrote an article about that and put it on Dandavats. My God, it created a whole wave there, you know. Because I put that quote, what Prabhupada says, that the male vision is always superior to the female one. I put that in the article, on the header of the article, you know. And, ooh, that was really sparking off a lot of interest and waves there, you know. So that's first of all one thing, you know, that the emotional nature of a woman makes it more difficult, you know, to carry that burden of Diksha Guru. I mean, how many men have collapsed under this? So many. So do we have to, you know, send the women into that also? You know, maybe better not, you know. But nevertheless, I don't think we can make a rule. A woman cannot be guru. No. No. That's bodily platform. Yeah? And that's not according to what Prabhupada says. Yeah? But we have to understand more deeply why, as a rule, the woman's nature is not so suitable for it. So then another thing is, first of all, we have said already, mother is the first guru. Why not concentrate on that role? Why not take that more seriously? You know? That's one thing. Then the other thing is that actually, you know, a true guru is always guru. People will come, people will take inspiration, people will take guidance. You know, nothing can stop guru from being guru. And shiksha, instruction, the purpose of diksha is actually shiksha, guidance, instruction. So in one sense, shiksha is much more important than that ceremony of diksha. Right? So and nobody is stopping any woman from giving guidance and instruction and upliftment. Nobody. There's nothing impeding us here. There's thousands of devotees out there who need guidance, instruction, care. Nobody's stopping any woman from giving that. So what's the problem? I can't see a problem. Just go and be guru. Just go and do the job. Just uplift, inspire, instruct, guide. What's the problem? You don't need authorization for that.
Well, Prabhupada said, I want all of my disciples to be gurus.
Yes.
It means ladies and
gentlemen. Yes, but it doesn't say what kind of guru, whether it's Diksha or Shiksha. Right? So, nobody is stopping anybody. Every woman who is a mother is guru. Yes. So you can understand that in so many ways. Yeah? Yes. So, we are guru simply by telling other people about Krishna, by giving them Krishna consciousness. We are acting as some kind of guru, Vatma Pradashika guru, Shiksha guru, whatever, you know. Yes. So, you know, there's nothing that can stop us from serving and preaching, and, you know, I can't see any problem, you know. Hi? Well, so, if we are running after that, that's already disqualification, you know? Yes, I mean, I've heard even this comment, but the Diksha Gurus are the ones who get all the donations. Yes, yes, I've heard, I'm not going to mention any names, but yes, one person has said that to me. Yes, I was completely shocked, I couldn't. And I couldn't believe that this was coming out of her mouth, you know. Yes. So, and of course, we can say, well, the man might also have that motivation. Well, but that's between them and Krishna, you know. Maybe that's why many men couldn't maintain that position, you know, because the motive was not quite completely pure there, you know. Yes. Yes. I mean, for me personally, it suits me perfectly, you know, that all the pomp and focus is on the Diksha Gurus, and we Shiksha people can quietly do our job here, you know, so this is perfect for me. Okay. Good. So, any questions? Anybody else having any questions?
Yes, just one little. You said there is no, that somebody said that there is no need for authorization to, but for the, to
no, Diksha Guru, of course there's authorization, but Shiksha, nobody's stopping anybody from preaching and uplifting and guiding and inspiring people. For that, you don't need authorization. You know? If you're a bona fide preacher, you know, of course, if you're bogus, if you're not preaching according to Prabhupada or something, then you might not be allowed to preach somewhere, you know. But in general, you know, nobody can stop a person from inspiring other devotees, you know. You don't need authorization for that, to inspire and uplift. So, and according to our, you know, propensities and potencies, capacities, we can simply do it, you know? Huh? Yes. Okay, let us quickly turn to the neighbor and share what this whole seminar did to us. Not just the last session, but just really in a nutshell, the essence.
Thank you.